Good evening. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California. It's tape number 456 and it's August 31st, 1980. I'm going to continue this hour. I'd like to do about 10 more hours on Ronald Reagan. Maybe I'll write a short book or an article about Ronald Reagan, but I want to continue where I left off, the milieu of Reagan as governor of California, in order to understand the forces behind him, the power behind him. The true story of the violence in California alone has never really been put together and identified as the FBI counterintelligence operation that it really was, the Operation Chaos that the CIA and Pentagon had instrumented out here in California that followed around the country. Last week I was talking about a book by Bill Turner, The Power on the Right. He was an ex-FBI man who I said had left the FBI because of the black bag jobs and the burglaries, and he disagreed with J. Edgar Hoover, and he became a researcher at the time of the Kennedy assassination. He was a writer for Rampart's magazine. He's written a book on the police establishment. He went to New Orleans to help Jim Garrison with his investigation into the Kennedy assassination. And I want to just give a few direct quotes from the book, The Power on the Right, because of its relationship not only to the Kennedy murders, but to the future politicians that are behind and were behind Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan. He wrote in his book, it was not until the assassination of John Kennedy on November 22, 1963, that the political center of gravity of the nation as a whole began a perceptible shift to the right. That was 17 years ago when I began my research and when Charles Spears began his research in Texas 17 years ago. Bill Turner wrote, the wealthy Texans who helped shape and advance Lyndon Johnson's career were men like George and Herman Brown from Brown Root Construction Company, that went on to build the bases in Vietnam and later over in Iran, Clint Murchison Sr. and H.L. Hunt, hardly subscribed to the liberal ethic, and they were behind their protege, Lyndon Johnson. He wrote, the escalation of the war in Vietnam in 1964 and 65 renewed the anti-communism and the cries of the Korean War, and the reactionary forces were ready to take hold as soon as John Kennedy was assassinated. He added that one of the great ironies at our time was that as Martin Luther King and Robert Kennedy were murdered in 1968, the far right and the law and order people came in even stronger. The lifestyles and the subcultures clashed with each other. There were riots. Martin Luther King was against violence, and because he was nonviolent like Mahatma Gandhi and was murdered, the violence stirred around the city and were the excuse for more law and order instead of more understanding. The direct quotation of Revillo Oliver that I mentioned last week in American Opinion, that he gave it a speech working for Robert Welch and the Birch Society, was in 1966 at a meeting of God, Family, and Country rally. He said the vaporizing of the Jews was a beatific vision. Family, God, Family, and Country is the symbol of Paul LaSalt's campaign, again the campaign manager of Ronald Reagan, hiding under God and Family and Country. The same people that supported Salazar in Portugal or Franco in Spain, Batista in Cuba, Trujillo in the Dominican Republic, and Chiang Kai-shek in China and so forth are the people behind God, Family, and Country having rallies when they're supporting dictatorships and drug dealers and criminals as heads of states all over the world. The FBI had located people involved in the Kennedy assassination, a Lauren Hall. He was in Johnsondale, it's called, in California. They found him in 1964. He was working with anti-Castro Cubans. He was in Dallas in September of 1963. He was working with a William Seymour from Arizona. These people were identified as being part of the California milieu of the Minutemen, the Nazis. They were having meetings, and as I said before, Ronald Reagan refused to extradite Edgar Eugene Bradley, who was attending those meetings, who was linked to the assassination teams that also worked out of Fort Benning, Georgia, and with the National States Rights Party in California. The link of Georgia to California with the Nazi Party, the Klan, the anti-Castro Cubans. That Billy James Hargis, the head of the Christian Crusade, had meetings, a meeting for freedom and the American Committee to Free Cuba. He had literature about the anti-communist crusade, and he was one of the very first financial advisors and angels, one of the original angels behind Ronald Reagan, and he had him elected to the Republican Party Central Committee. He was one of the people behind Reagan's campaign, and he was also named in conjunction with activities in the Kennedy assassination and was suspected assassins. Major Edgar Bundy of the Church League of America, part of the McIntyre-Hargis team, active in Atlanta, had an organization, interestingly enough, at Wheaton College in Wheaton, Illinois. Bundy had attended Oglethorpe College in Atlanta, and he graduated from Wheaton College in Illinois and then was a newspaper reporter and entered the Air Force in 1941. Now, this man was active, this Major Edgar Bundy, who belonged to the Church League of America, out of Wheaton, Illinois, and went into as an intelligence officer and worked with Nationalist China's. He got a prize from Madame Claire Chennault, Major General Claire Chennault, and the Flying Tigers for his work with the Chinese, and that was, of course, linked to narcotics and the CIA during the war. This Major Edgar Bundy of the Church League of America was working in Chicago at the same time Ronald Reagan was there. Ronald Reagan moved to California in 1937, but a group was called the Chicago Crime Commission that investigated Roosevelt's court, and they didn't want too many new dealers in the courts in Chicago. And this Major Edgar Bundy of the Church League of America, a far rightist from Wheaton College, Illinois, as I say, an Air Force intelligence, was a big factor behind Ronald Reagan later. Bundy was active during the year that Reagan was running for president. The first time they wanted him, the League issued a motion picture called Ronald Reagan on the Welfare State, and they advertised the fact that he was hitting hard against state welfareism. I don't know if Major Edgar Bundy of the Church League knew Ronald Reagan in Illinois in 1937, and being in intelligence, whether he was instrumental in sending him to Hollywood, where Reagan was beginning to receive immediately $200 a week on a payroll at a studio. Bundy was active in the apartheid nations of Africa. He praised them, and he had, this Bundy was one of the men that had these church files that I was speaking about before. He had data banks on anti-communists and so forth. An interesting career between Chicago and the church and Ronald Reagan's activities and Wheaton College in Illinois. And I'm wondering if, because he sponsored Reagan later, if he knew Ronald Reagan when he went to the Christian College in Illinois, and whether he was useful in counterintelligence going back to those early days. It certainly is important to ask the questions and then look for answers later in the background of Ronald Reagan. Patrick Frawley put up $200 million of sales money from Eversharp, Schick, and Technicolor into the anti-Christian communist crusade, the American Security Council, the Roman Catholic-oriented Twin Circle Publishing Company. Well, the very staunch conservatives in Texas were not Catholic. The California group, as I say, worked with Ronald Reagan, who was Catholic, and so was Frawley. And one of the people on Frawley's list was Governor Ronald Reagan. He supported former Senator George Murphy and Max Rafferty, and he was really big for Ronald Reagan and gave him a lot of money to start his political career. And as I said before, Patrick Frawley hired Ed Butler, who worked for him. Butler came from New Orleans. He was an army man. He worked for the Birch Society, the White Citizens Council, the Free Voice of Latin America. He formed the American Council of the Americans, the INCA, and he worked with Dr. Ochsner down in New Orleans. That's that ultra-conservative. And he was hailed by Hale Boggs later on the Warren Commission. And it was Ed Butler working for Frawley, as I said, who made that record, Oswald's Self-Portrait in Red, where Oswald said, "I am a Marxist." That was a setup to be used, and it was immediately played on radio the day that John Kennedy was murdered. Frawley, according to Bill Turner, played an equally important role in the political career of Ronald Reagan. His candidacy was launched by Frawley, as well as the men from California, as I mentioned, Henry Salvatore of Western Geophysical. Now, Salvatore had a corporation that later merged into Litton Industries, and that is very important into the history of Ronald Reagan's early career. The Reagan Finance Committee, very early, was spearheaded by Salvatore, and Salvatore formed a company that later merged with Litton Industry. They raised first $1 million for Goldwater and funded the Christian Anti-Communist Crusade. There are about 40 or 50 Christian organizations they were behind, and put their money in the public relations firm and banked upon Ronald Reagan. Their theme was Reagan's campaign, that creative society, and they pushed Ronald Reagan as their candidate. Because of the consistency that they pushed Reagan and the amount of money and power behind Reagan, I wonder about this Bundy in Illinois with connections, this Major Edgar Bundy, to the churches and the church councils, and if, in fact, he knew him in Chicago in 1937, and if Reagan was sent to California to continue, given a movie career, and to continue to be important to their political advantage. Now, Henry Ford, the Ford Motor Company, was one of the largest organizations that supplied and armed Adolf Hitler. There were others, but Ford was probably the worst, along with ITT. And Henry Ford was the gentleman who took forged documents called the Elders of the Prodigals of Zion, allegedly written by a clique of Jews that said they were intent to rule the world. The actual truth was that the power, the wealth, is in the hands of mostly Gentile corporations with a few Jews in the front, but not very many of them. Henry Ford was angry at Karl Marx. Marx was a Jew. They were angry the Tsar was thrown out, getting back to that early history again. And Henry Ford wanted a revolution in this country against all the Soviets. He wanted the American people to rise up and throw out all people in the labor movement and suspected communists. And Ford Motor Company was very active politically in Germany before the war and after the war in rebuilding Germany. And when Litton Industries was formed, Tex Thornton came to California, and they worked for the Hughes Aircraft, and then they formed Litton Industry. Tex Thornton had come from Ford Motor Company in Michigan out to California and took his buddy Roy Ash, and they took $43 million that I've mentioned many times from used contracts from our tax money and formed Litton Industry. But the important thing is that this violently anti-Semitic, pro-Hitler stance of the Ford Motor Company produced people like Tex Thornton, who came out to the Hughes organization and formed their own companies and formed Litton Industry, and Salvatore merged his company then with Litton, so that the same people that put Richard Nixon in power and Ronald Reagan were a nest of people in California linked to companies that didn't just fade away. If they were just companies by name and had no meaning, that would be one thing. But Roy Ash, under Nixon's administration, was head of Office of Management Budget and put in the military dictatorship in Greece and dictatorship in Chile. And Allende had been murdered, and the ITT and the corporations were putting Nazis with Nazi armbands and swastikas coming out in countries all over the world that the World Bank and American corporations were and are financing today. And I didn't mention last week the news in Bolivia, the government that's in power now, the narcotics dealers, the known narcotics dealers working with the United States, protected by the United States, are taking heads and putting them on sticks and parading down the streets and torturing hundreds of people, this new military dictatorship. That was an act that the Ustashi, the Croatians, did in Yugoslavia, and Hitler claimed that they were more Nazi than he, that they should, he liked his killings done behind the gates of concentration camps, if possible, where the world and the press wouldn't see it. This is going on in Bolivia. This is the heritage of these people. But Salvatore was behind Richard Nixon's campaign. He was behind Ronald Reagan's campaign, and he merged his company with Litton Industry, that was an offshoot of Hughes and also Hughes Aircraft, and also of Henry Ford. Henry Ford had another hand in the California pie, and this is important to understand what the space stations are about, what the assassination teams are about, or how mind control and counterintelligence came. RAND Corporation was formed in California, and that became the think tank for the Pentagon, for the decision makers that worked with the Hoover Institute, whose sole goal is anti-Marxism. If it were anti-Marxism, that would be bad enough, but they're really anti-labor, and they bring in goon squads and kill labor leaders and attempt to keep down the wages of the masses in this country. And certainly there have been no leaders of great insight to free people from the cost today of education and health and housing and the necessities of life. Education, housing, and health and job opportunities are all being diminished, and the profits in the hands of the few are becoming larger. So the problems that they confronted and mapped out are working for them. And in the event that there are riots or street scenes, Richard Nixon left the heritage of his Operation Chaos, and Ronald Reagan as governor had his SWAT teams ready, and we'll go into some of those provisions. The SWAT teams that were formed were set up, according to headlines, in case there are food riots later in this country. Well, RAND Corporation, according to a book published by RAND on their 25th anniversary, I'm quoting, was a social invention. RAND was a meeting ground where problems and resources of science and technology came together. RAND was incorporated in May 1948 with funding from the Ford Foundation. That was May 1948. Ford Foundation, after a two-year gestation period called Project RAND, it was a special experimental contract between the Army Air Force and Douglas Aircraft Company. The Air Force Project RAND, R-A-N-D, contract went to the RAND Corporation in May of 1948. May 48 was the year that Israel became a country, and it was the year that all the top Nazis, about 30 of them, were assembled in Egypt to meet with Anwar Sadat and the Egyptians and Nasser. The Bormann Brotherhood had been formed, and the plans to wipe out Israel, surround it, and control it, were being made in May of 1948, the same year that Israel became a country. The RAND book talks about in 1950 they undertook work for the Atomic Energy Commission in addition to the Air Force, and in 1959 their projects agency became part of NASA, the National Aeronautics Space Administration. So that the projects of RAND went from the inventions and ideas of Ford Motor Company out to California, because the motor car company doesn't conceive of the operations and inventions. RAND can conceive of them and suggest who gets the contracts. In their blurb of advertising in their book, they aren't advertising, but inside the book covers, they have suggestions of projects of RAND that were done in the past 25 years, such as remotely manned systems in tactical aerial warfare, Cuba and Pearl Harbor, hindsight and foresight, Soviet expenditures on scientific research, the study of passive communications of satellites, United States policy in Middle East, constraints and choices, economics of defense in the nuclear age. Everything for war out of the Ford Motor Company that started making its tanks for and cars for the United States and for Germany went into the thinking part, went out to RAND, and RAND was an extension of the Ford Motor Company, and RAND and Roy Ash, Litton Industries, and Hughes Aircraft, and Lockheed, and the aerospace industries have all profited to the tune of millions and billions of dollars of warfare money ever since the end of World War I, thanks to the think tanks that projected the necessity of continuing that war against Russia that began the day World War I was over and Germany was rearmed for that war. There's a magazine out, getting back to Ronald Reagan's personal career, a magazine called National Journal. The subscription is $450 a year, so it must be pretty good. There's an article about Ronald Reagan titled, Ronald Reagan Plays Chairman of the Board to Carter's Corporate Controller. And there's a quotation, one of Ronald Reagan's wonderful quotations. He says, I am a candidate of big business, he boasted to delegates that he represents big business. And they had a journal that came out in July of this year that somebody got for me. And there is another quotation. He went to Sacramento with the image of a movie actor and a cowboy hero. And I think in all the time he was there, a lot of people never did learn that he was a working governor. He spent a lot of time at it. Now, that cowboy image is very important. It was an image that Adolf Hitler used in conquering, going after the rednecks. It was described in a book, The Eagle's Nest. There's a chapter in there I love called The Fuhrer and the Cowboys. Hitler had a secret passion for cowboys and Indians. This is interesting because of the similarity of the people that put Richard Nixon and into power and Ronald Reagan into the ascendancy of the governorship and how they did it and what Reagan did when he was governor. There's another article that just came out. This is an essay by William Sapphire, Ronnie Le Cowboy, the idea of Ronald Reagan being the cowboy and dispelling the idea in Europe that he's just a chimpanzee feeding actor or a bipolar explorer, that Ronnie is an important image, not only Ronnie Le Cowboy, but that he will have responsibility for the future administration. That's what William Sapphire is saying, but he calls him the cowboy, and the National Journal refers to him as that image. He sits on his horse. He has a gun by his side. Esquire has an article this month on Ronald Reagan. He loves that farm and the ranch, and he rides in the sunset in the afternoons. He loves to ride his horse on the horse and play the cowboy image, and people visualize him as a Westerner on a Western ranch with his horse. As I say, the comparisons are important because this image was played by John Wayne, and there was a man in Germany named Karl Mays, and Adolf Hitler just loved him. As I say, this book describes the Fuhrer and the cowboys, and it goes into the fact, I'll quote a few lines, Hitler had a secret passion. Fascinated by cowboys and Indians, he found the stories written by Karl May, a German who wrote about the American frontier, fascinating. Hitler had sold, Germany had sold 70 million copies of May's works. They were among the top 10 of the all-time fiction bestseller list. He wrote more than 25 novels, none of them very good, by a young age. In every book, the hero is always a strong, daring man with a self-proclaimed wisdom and judgment beyond his years, a horseman, a crack shot. May himself was a pathological liar. He said he visited the United States, but he hadn't. He read history, not history books, but cowboy books of the American Indians and the American West, and he loved them. Hitler once told Skorzeny, when they talked about May lying about being in America, he said, that doesn't matter. Skorzeny told Hitler, Dante was never in hell either, and he could write about hell. So May could write in Germany for Adolf Hitler these stories of the Western, and Hitler had an actor, Louis Trenker, who was one of his favorite actors, who was fascinated with cowboys and Indians and played that part to the hilt. A lot of people are not aware of Hitler's fascination for the American Westward movement, and in this book on the Eagle's Nest, he described May's protagonist loved to slaughter members of tribes of redskins. And Adolf Hitler perceived this as an inferior species, that they were grasping, they were outcasts, and there was this proclamation of the superior over the inferior. And the word misfit was used, and in the Wild West of May's books, he liked the word misfit and their tortured existence. And Hitler later took over the rule, the word misfit, and misfits became irritating to him. He took gypsies, and he called them inferior, and a burden to the Third Reich, and he began to separate them. He liked the idea of the extinction of American Indians, and one of the things he could defend himself about if he was attacked was, look what you did to the American Indians with your Westward movement. He had a sense of what happened in America, so he had his own protection in case he was charged with doing something that we hadn't taught him to do. Hitler began first, before he got the Jews, to exterminate about 30,000 gypsies. He called them misfits, those gypsies, and then he went to the midgets and exterminated them. He had a man in Germany, Arthur Neeb, a Nazi, who had worked with J. Edgar Hoover, who helped get the gypsies and kill them. In this book, it said one of the men that was out getting the gypsies for Adolf Hitler two-thirds of them in pre-Anschluss Germany that were living in Bohemian style. The man in charge of getting them out of Germany was none other than Arthur Niebe, N-E-B-E, the same Nazi who corresponded with J. Edgar Hoover in a friendly manner. They exchanged information from the Gestapo headquarters, October 1939, and were corresponding with each other. Mr. Niebe set up camps for the Berlin Gypsies. He had a special place. He ordered them transported out of Germany starting October 20th, 1939. That was right after the beginning of the invasion of Poland. Some were taken to Jewish ghettos. Others were killed on the spot. They were to annihilate all the Gypsy misfits and murder them, similar to the orders of the Obersalzberg cowboy. And he compared it to the cowboy rounding up the Gypsies. And then, as I say, he went on to the Wild West. He liked stories of the wolf of the Wild West. Hitler liked those. He compared the wolf who gave no mercy to the victims. And he began to identify the men at Dachau with the wolves. And then he imported mosquitoes to give prisoners insect bites. And he would give them malaria and call them misfits. And they would die without medication. Or if they didn't die from that, they were amputated and cut up and then gassed later. He had punishments at Dachau that he took from Western terms. He used places he'd call it the stake, taken from American literature, cowboy and Indian literature, and he'd have posts set up because he believed in the cowboy and Indian idea. As I say, this is from a book, The Eagle's Nest, on Adolf Hitler's love of the Western stories of cowboy and Indian. He had victims stretched on the trestle. That was part of our culture. The upper part of the body was horizontal and the legs dangled at the side. He liked that, and he would whip people with strokes, 100 strokes, and they'd be screaming and counting their strokes. And as I say, he would start taking people 27 inches tall. He began with misfit dwarfs. He had that little dwarf that was on the lap of J.P. Morgan, the financier, and taken off and killed because he was against Wall Street. He said she was a dwarf, a tool of Wall Street, and she was shipped to Auschwitz and gassed, along with 10,000 other dwarfs, Jews, dwarfs, gypsies, and so forth. But he used Western terminology, and in fact, Adolf Hitler built a museum for Mays. He built a wax museum, the Karl May Museum near Dresden, that he established because he was so fond of the idea. May read Fenimore Cooper, The Last of the Mohicans, and wrote a book, The Ride Through the Desert, and Hitler reread these novels over and over again. He reversed the swastika of the Indians, and many people think that Hitler's love of the swastika goes back to ancient times, earlier than the Thule Society, and this book on the Eagle's Nest explains part of his interest in the swastika because of the Western craze. So the movie industry was very important in Nazi Germany for propaganda. It was used brilliantly, and the use of the cinema there was transported to the United States, and cinema was used, the cowboy and Indian, the go-get'em, the good guy, the bad guy, the simplistic solutions. Ronald Reagan was wearing his cowboy hat. He adored John Wayne, the Western movement, and this was very much part of the very conservative ideology of the milieu in Hollywood, the movies that we still see on television, and the propaganda machine. And it was this kind of image created out of that milieu that made Ronald Reagan so lovable in 1966 that people were willing to go out and vote for him. A million uncommitted Democrats were the ones that pushed Reagan over the hilt and made him governor, not the Republicans even, but those people that weren't really sure what they wanted or knew what they wanted. But the Western image has played an important subconscious level in our society that Hitler understood and that Reagan was a part of in the Hollywood scene with the actors that were doing these Western scenes. And this is a point, as I say, that many people may not be aware of, the use of the motion picture industry that bragged about the fact that it was able, along with General Electric, a huge corporation, to take a man who never had been in politics in his life and make him the governor of a state from 1966 to 1974, when the country was exploding after the death of John Kennedy and would soon witness major assassinations after that time. Half hour's up now. If you're used to these programs, I'm going to turn the tape over and then I'll be back with you in a few minutes. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California.